the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board.
Woo!
Midwest Swing, part of Cold Omaha and Zone Coverage Podcast Network. Hanging out with you late on a, a Wednesday night here as we are coming off a 4-0 win for your Minnesota Twins in Milwaukee as part of the second half of a home-and-home doubleheader between the Twins and the Brewers. Obviously, Bartolo Colon instrumental in getting the Twins back to 500 with, I believe, 7 strong innings, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk, and no earned runs in a shutout win between him, Taylor Rogers, and Matt Belisle. Obviously, a very, very strong team effort. Home run by Brian Dozier, some doubles off the bat of Jorge Polanco, Dozier, and Miguel Sano. Twins hold the Brewers to just 5 hits, 2 apiece from Ryan Braun and Orlando Arcia, along with a single from Eric Sogard, but otherwise a pretty quiet night from the bats. As far as Milwaukee is concerned. First of all, I felt like I kind of owed you guys this chat. We skipped out on last night because it got really late at Target Field. As you might have seen, the Twins absolutely blasted Matt Garza last night. And that game took forever, both between Garza pitching poorly and Mejia, Adalberto Mejia getting hurt and doing his usual song and dance. It was a very long night at the park. So, never let it be said that I'm not a man of the people and don't want to help you guys out or actually give you guys the periscopes that you all deserve. I'm just kidding. But just hanging out here, waiting out the lightning as Ryan Sawyer just noticed. I am going to shut the TV off above my head. That's flashing just a little bit too much. But so we can chit-chat about anything you guys want to talk about. Obviously, the August trade deadline is going to be something we have to think about. The Twins getting back to 500 for the first time in, I think, like a month or pretty close to it is also very big. Dietrich Enns, as Javen in the chat room reminds us, is also something to think about. He got called up after tonight's game and is going to start tomorrow in the series finale as the Twins go for a 4-game sweep of the Brewers. So that's going to push Kyle Gibson, Berríos, and Irvin Santana back to the Detroit series over the weekend. I see Steven asking how severe the injury was with Mejia. It sounds like it's not terribly worrisome. It is a MRI was, the MRI came back clean, just inflammation. So it doesn't sound like it's going to be that big of a deal. But as you know, with pitcher injuries, even with the 10-day disabled list, unless a guy comes off right at 10 days, usually the guy has to get ramped back up. Depending on how the team wants to manipulate it, and I'm not saying they would do it unethically, but you've seen with Hector Santiago, who starts today with the Red Wings, did not go particularly well. A guy has to get ramped back up once he's been down for a while, and so sometimes 10 days can turn into 2 weeks or 20 days pretty easily. So I don't know that we know for sure how far Mejia is going to be down, or how long, rather, but I suspect if it's exactly 10 days, then that would probably be, obviously, the ideal situation. But if it's longer than that, then he's probably going to need some sort of rehab stint and or getting ramped back up and back into shape. So it's hard to say right now, but doesn't appear to be anything more serious than that. Good point by Ryan Sawyer about how the Brewers are so close to first place. Basically, this series paired a couple of teams who overachieved in similar fashions to this point. Now, granted, the Brewers have done it differently. The Twins don't have
the Brewers, and the Twins game started.
Yeah, thank you for that, Siri. That's great. The Twins don't have a Domingo Santana necessarily, or a Eric Thames, or anything like that. But to be to this point in the season, chasing down the Chicago Cubs is obviously very impressive. Or hanging in there with the Chicago Cubs. Granted, I think that's more of a stagnance of the Chicago Cubs than anything else. So. I don't know. I just think that it's been a great season under Craig Counsell, who has come under fire for his decisions about bunting, or rather not bunting, in recent games. But he's kind of a hang 'em and bang 'em kind of manager, and he understands what his offense is capable of and what his offense is tailored to do. You're not bunting with a team that's got Domingo Santana, Eric Thames, Ryan Braun, Manny Pena. You know, those kind of guys are just not bunting guys. Hernan Perez, you know, it's even all the way down to the bottom of the order where Orlando Arcia usually hits. Those are not really guys who are going to be bunting regularly. I mean, Arcia might, but he's going to be a guy who gets on with, you know, shooting the ball to the gaps and stealing bases more than anything. So, you know, I think Council gets the general deal, and that team is in really good position to threaten the Cubs into the years moving forward. Now, with that said, if you have questions, again, feel free to leave them in the chat room here, but it is obviously better to leave them at Brandon_Warren on Twitter, and I'm going to be able to see those better. So, with that said, Doubles has a question on Twitter. Does Molitor get extended? There's been no contract discussion this far into the season, and it can't bode well. I'd say the odds are against. What say you? Yeah. You know, even to this point, I don't think the odds are terrifically strong that he's back. With that said, if he gets this team to the postseason, I think all bets are off. But I just haven't gotten the vibe that he's definitely safe or anything like that. And I don't necessarily think he is. And so you start looking for other options. And a name that I've been saying for a long time is Sandy Alomar Jr. With Sandy Alomar Jr., what you have is you got the Hispanic influence, which is big in this clubhouse. And to be able to communicate with those guys is important. That's not to say that Paul Molitor can't. And in fact, when Molitor was a roving instructor, the Hispanic players seemed to gravitate towards him when he would show up in the clubhouse back in 2013, 2014. So I don't want to say that Molitor doesn't have a strong bond with those Hispanic players. I know he does. But with Alomar, you've got that. You've got the former catcher factor. You've got the Cleveland Indians factor. And it seems to me he's a little bit more of an analytics type or a more forward-thinking guy. The fact that he's hung around in the Indians organization as long as he has would seem to suggest to me that he is. If they were to stay internally, I think Jeff Pickler, again, a name that Doubles mentions as well, would be at the forefront of any list and hopefully would be the kind of guy the team could retain under a new manager if they go in that direction. And the biggest issue when you do these moves, for instance, when the Twins kept Guardy along but fired a bunch of coaches but didn't fire Rick Anderson and then made, you know, him, I don't remember if they made him take on Neil Allen or not. I think they maybe did. But maybe Neil Allen was with Paul Molitor, actually. But the biggest thing is when you don't do these turnovers all at once, then you end up having deserving coaches get thrown out with the bathwater, so to speak. The Terry Steinbachs of the world who, you know, I think Terry Steinbach did a fine job as bench coach and, you know, catching instructor and all that. And instead he gets shown the door and I don't even know what he's doing. He's probably coaching Legion Ball now or something like that. When you don't do these firings all at once or you do them incrementally, that's when things get goofy. And I would be really, really upset if they made a move that didn't allow Jeff Pickler to stay in the organization. And same for James Rowson, who I think you can't say enough good things about the things he's been able to accomplish with guys like Eddie Rosario. Rosario, again, let's see, a couple walks tonight. He's up to a 330 on-base percentage. If he was going to have a 330 on-base percentage based on how he hit the last 2 years, you would expect him to have hit 310 or 305. He's hitting 288. That's about a 42-point differential in his on-base from his average. Again, that's not going to make anybody forget about Joe Mauer or even Max Kepler, for that matter. We'll see if that can keep up. But right now, he's got a slash of 288, 330, 481. And again, if you haven't checked out the zone coverage feature that I wrote about him on Tuesday, I would highly recommend that. Because, again, not because my writing is great or anything like that, but really great quotes from James Rowson, Paul Molitor, some analytics stuff that I broke down from Fangraphs. And frankly, you know, just based on his results coming into the season, last year, even when he didn't play particularly well, when he put the ball in play to each outfield, left, center, right, he had a 900 OPS in each direction. And so, you know, honestly, I think the talent was always there. What Rowson and Rudy Hernandez are doing to unlock that talent is remarkable. And what Rowson told me, again, you can hear it in my podcast, Midwest Swing, you can find on zonecoverage.com, or in the article, was that part of the training of the batter's eye is giving them the ability to make decisions. And so if you want to train for velocity, you turn up the machine. If you want to train curveballs, you find a machine that throws you curveballs. When it comes to training your eye, you know, not everybody's born like Joe Mauer. You have to put the ball in different locations, make a guy make decisions. And what Rowson said is the biggest thing is that you always, always, always want your hitters to make decisions. If you give a guy 20 pitches in the same zone, it becomes less about muscle memory and just then you just repeat or you just kind of cheat on your swing. And again, it's not because you're consciously cheating, but it's just like if you're lifting weights, eventually you start compensating or you start doing things outside of what will make you a good hitter mentally. Mentally, what you have to do at the plate is identify strike, ball, location, what you can do with that pitch, what the count is, so on and so forth. And so it's these drills that have been done, and again, Rowson mentioned Rudy Hernandez a lot. I think that the language barrier or lack thereof helps too, is that they have a very strong work ethic together. They're always out there working. And they have gotten Rosario to now where I think he's walking about 6% of the time or 5.5%. We can even, let's pull up his Fangraphs page since we're here and it's late. Why not? Rosario is up to 6.1%. His career walk rate is 4%. He was 3.2 and 3.4% the last two seasons. So he's almost doubled his career walk rate. And not quite doubled, but not far from it either. So doing a really great job. And I just think that, again, I talked to Rowson before last night's game, and I said, you know, the name that came up, and it was not a name I went looking for when I was researching for my piece in the offseason, was Kirby Puckett. And again, it was a different time in the game, and Kirby Puckett struck out, even at his peak, I think like 12 or 13% of the time, which in this day and age would be like Joe Mauer. But Puckett walked like not at all early in his career, and he never became a huge walk guy. But there is a track record for guys walking. I think it was like 3% of the time, 3.5% of the time, and becoming truly great players. Now, does that mean I think that Eddie Rosario is going to become the next Kirby Puckett? Well, no, I don't think that. But keep in mind, Kirby Puckett's breakout season would have been, let's see, I think he debuted in 84. 85, I think 86 was the first year he was really good, which would have been, I think, the 30 home run season with the leg kick. And so that would have been his age 26 season. Puck was born in 1960. We believed 61 for most of his life, but he was born in 60. And so he was 26. Rosario right now is, he's turning 26 in September. So this is about the right time for a guy like that to really break out. Again, I'm not saying he's going to be Kirby Puckett. He's not a stud center fielder like Puckett was. And, doesn't have a lot of the intangible stuff that Puckett did. But I believe more now than I did at any point previously that he's a part of the future here in the Twin Cities, which, I didn't believe at any point really prior to breaking him down in the offseason. And again, when you do those off-season pieces, you're still kind of wish casting because it's easy to kind of see things in the off-season and then think about how they could happen. And again, you're not going through the rigors of the season or anything like that, but in your mind you think, yeah, that could happen. And again, I'm impressed with what Rosario has done, but I'm not gonna chisel his Cooperstown bust, so to speak. But I just think you have to be impressed with what he's accomplished so far this season, and what he's been capable of. He's the guy hitting behind Miguel Sano right now. Who would have seen that coming 2, 3, 4 months ago? Steven says 31 home runs for Puckett in 86, walked 34 times. I mean, Kirby was one of the best bad ball hitters in the game, but and Rosario is a bad ball hitter, so. Maybe it's not crazy. I don't know. I would probably be laughed off the face of the earth, or laughed out of the Twin Cities, or called the town crier, or be one of those picketing people down by the light rail station. But it wouldn't surprise me if he turns into a really nice player for this team. And again, too, what's nice about the current roster construction is that, you know, they have three center fielders, so they don't have to really be that, they don't have to really be that slavish to fourth outfielder constructs, whether it's Robbie Grossman, Zach Granite, Mitch Garver, who can play a little bit of left field, you know, so on and so forth. But that flexibility helps, and I think that Rosario obviously plays a part in that, as does Max Kepler. Two walks for Kepler tonight, two, up to 249, 320, 428 on the slash line. Three-hit game for Dozier, two-hit game for Polanco. Polanco is something like 12 for 24 since August 1st, which is tremendous. So obviously doing a very good job kind of getting the bat turned around, which, you know, I think we all saw as maybe not necessarily likely, but certainly possible based on the fact that he was a very accomplished hitter in the minor leagues and even before this year in the big leagues. So I'm pretty enthused about his chances of stealing back that shortstop job if he hasn't already, which is, I think, a very, very positive scenario. Javen, I saw your question. If you can send it to me on Twitter, that would be great. Grant says, why bring up ends instead of just having G go Sunday in Mejia's spot? I don't know. I mean, part of me wonders if they really like G in that long role. He has been so successful. I think it's 9 strikeouts in 7 innings, has given up something like 6 hits, and just 7 shutout innings, if I didn't mention that. But I don't know. I did think that G was going to be the guy, too. But he only threw 40, was it 55 pitches? I don't remember what it was. It was 41 strikes. And I can't remember if it was 55 pitches, 41 strikes, or something like that. So he's not exactly stretched out, and so maybe that was the issue. But he's really been a shot in the arm for their long relief corps. You know, again, that's not something you want to rely on a lot when every game matters a lot. But I don't know. I thought he was going to get the spot starts too, and I think they would still consider it if he continued to pitch well, but I think the hope is that they're not going to have to go down that road, which, you know, I don't know. Doubles. Twins lineup depth was exposed, sans Sano. Another big bopper to protect him would be huge. Any ideas of off-season candidates? Funny you should say that. Actually, I was just thinking the other day, you know, it's never too early to get a jump start on what kind of off-season moves you'd like to make. I still think Pat Neshek should come back and finish out his career as a Twin, you know, help him lock down the back end of that bullpen and just, you know, make it right for all the issues that he had early in his career. But J.D. Martinez is the guy they need to sign. And if you can put him at DH, your offense looks incredibly dynamic. Again, we just saw that the trade market for a guy like that was not particularly huge. And I don't know that the free agent market is going to be insane. You could probably get him for... I was having a chat with John Becker, a roster resource on Midwest Swing, last week. Probably a 5-year deal between $75 and maybe $90 or $100 million. I think the Twins can do that. I think you can do a $15 to $20 million per year deal. They needed to find an Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista at his peak type. Ideally, someone with some defensive value, which is certainly not the case with really Bautista or Encarnacion necessarily. And again, it's not that they need the defensive value, but it's that you could put them out there, you know, if you make it to the World Series or even in your interleague games, you have to have someone who can help you in the field. Again, that's not to say I want Robbie Grossman out of here. I think Robbie would be a great fourth outfielder who can mix and match against lefties and play, you know, 3 out of 7 days a week and give you on-base percentage and all that. But even with how good he's been at getting on base this year, he's still at 106 weighted runs created plus. So he's 6% above the league average as a hitter. Not really enough to prevent you from going out and spending $15, $17, $20 million on a guy like J.D. Martinez. So I think J.D. Martinez is the guy they need to target. Again, will they do that? I have no idea. But it makes a ton of sense, and you know he's obviously not going to have a draft pick attached to him because he was traded in season. And again, the market was a little bit cold for guys like that last year, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion again. So we'll see what happens, because I think that would be probably the perfect target If you had Edwin Encarnacion, no, I'm sorry, excuse me, J.D. Martinez and Miguel Sano batting in the middle of an order, set up with guys getting on base like Max Kepler, Rosario. If Buxton, you know, gets to a point where he has an OBP over 300, something he's never had in the big leagues, and I will tweet that once he gets there. He's at 293 now. If those guys can get on base in front of him, you know, you've got some guys in the middle of the order that can really turn it over. And again, at the bottom of the order with your Polanco's, your Buxton's, if you put him down there, if you move Dozier to the middle and move guys towards the top, it's a dynamic offense. Yeah, Steven says it's an absolutely scary lineup. It changes things a lot, and they do not have they don't have a type of hitter like that in their system right now. It could be Luis Diaz, it could be you know, someone like that, but it's just not imminent to bring up a guy like that. I think Mitch Garver, as a jack of all trades guy who can play left first catch, has value, especially as a hitter. But I don't think you can expect him to, you know, crack an 800 OPS necessarily. Again, certainly a very good bit piece slash, you know, guy who can help you a lot. Just not a guy that's going to give you a ton of value with the bat in terms of, you know, staying away from those big bats in the minor leagues. Twins Anonymous, and I would love to know who Twins Anonymous is, says, how good is Roy Smalley on color? Is Fox Sports North aware of how popular analysts not named Burt are going to be? That's a really great point. And again, I don't want to besmirch Burt because he's been a great pitcher and he's been doing this for a long time. But I do get a vibe of him mailing it in significantly over the last like 5 years, to the point where he's like not even bothering to pronounce names right. He's like a soundboard at this point. Uppercut swing, keep the fastball down, you know, things that just are not even things. If you were to transcribe them as a journalist, you'd be like, this is saying nothing. This is the epitome of saying nothing. Get somebody in here who will say something. It's the same reason why it drives me crazy that the dynamic now in journalism is who you are, not what you say. Downward plane. Ryan Sawyer's got a good point there, too, as far as things Burt says. We need to focus on what people say, not who says it. Just because someone famous says something doesn't make it important. And if somebody who's not famous says something profound, take it to heart. What bothers me is if I can write a piece that I think is good and it gets 12 page views, and then 2 weeks later someone else who has a bigger profile says it and they get retweets and everything, it's frustrating because, frankly, if somebody says it first and says it better, why do we care where it came from? So that's the most discouraging thing, because as I found in sports media, once you're in, it's pretty hard to get out. You know, they don't the expectations aren't there for you to keep grinding forever. Once you're in, you're just kind of coast the rest of the way. And it's like, that's why I keep working, because first of all, I want to keep working so that if I get there, I can stay there. Second of all, if I get there and I'm in, so to speak, you know, that's a nice boost to your credibility. So anyway, back to the point, because I kind of got waylaid there. Yeah, Roy is great. He still says and points to some old school things I don't love as far as productive outs and all that. But I learn something new from Roy Smalley every single time I watch a game, if not every inning or two. Just the way he breaks down what hitters are trying to do and what pitchers are trying to do to them, or vice versa, to combat each other. That's what players can offer. If a player, former player, excuse me, is just going to spout cliches, there's no value. Because you can get a sound machine, you can get a schmuck like me to do that. You can get anybody to spout cliches. It's what players should be giving you is inside the game analysis that you can't replicate having not played the game. Otherwise, there's no attraction. There's no reason to do it in the first place. You know, to have guys like Jack Morris or Burt Blyleven or Roy Smalley or LaTroy Hawkins, Torrey Hunter, Michael Kadire. You could go on all night. So give me guys that, one, understand the game and want to tell fans how the game is played. Not some old, back in my day, you know, credo or screed or, soliloquy, whatever you want to call it. I want guys with modern understanding of the game and how it's played today. Again, it's not played the way you played in the 80s, and it doesn't matter if you want it to get back there. It's not going to get back there, especially since they want to get to where fans nowadays are interested in the game. New fans. You're not going to interest them by talking about the old days. Fans that are 25 don't give a crap about that. So you need to modernize your thinking. Create an intelligent base of fan that will keep coming back for more. And that's what I want. That's what I want to see. Put on base percentage. Put slugging percentage in your graphics. Tell us about defensive runs saved. Tell us why batting average only tells you part of the story. Because batting average tells you a home run and a single are the same. Stop using that. Or use it in conjunction with other stats. Again, I feel like I'm ranting a little bit, but I want a smarter game, and I think Roy brings us closer to that. I don't know if Roy gets us there, but I think he does a phenomenal job. And again, it's kind of like when you have when you hang out with a certain friend that makes you look better. We'll have our friends that we hang out next to so that the girls look at us. That's what I feel like is kind of the dynamic we're experiencing. We've been so starved for good baseball analysis on TV that we'll take whatever we can get. And I don't want to be that way. I want to create a smarter culture of Twins fans. And I'm trying to do my part as much as I can. I want to see other people do the same. So, I don't know. I don't know. That's about all I got, guys. I went ranting. We got 26 minutes in. Thanks for joining us. Still working on our guest for next week, Midwest Swing. I know they'll be coming off a Tiger series, but I'm not sure where they... I know they head home after that. We got Arizona coming up here soon. And we also have... Check out on Zone Coverage. I put my player nicknames for jerseys. If I was in charge, Mr. Germany Keplert makes an appearance. Duffman, oh yeah, is on there as well. So check that out on zonecoverage.com. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy your day. Enjoy the weekend here coming up. And we'll see you next week. Peace.